Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Do you Uber a lot?
Yeah. I'm supposed to do it like that. Okay, all right, you nervous? You're nervous?
Yeah,
that
now
really hurt you?
Fuck, man.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ. Dude, that's like, oh. There's like a no joke, an indent in the knuckle. What'd you do?
Oh, God.
I just rammed the top of my knuckle. There's parts of your body sometimes that you hit that you're like, oh, that will be the most painful thing of all time.
Yeah, they're always the smallest little part of your body.
What'd you hit, though?
He hit.
I don't want to say it because it's going to make me sound like a giant, but a knuckle. The knuckle is very sensitive.
Small part of the knuckle.
Do you consider yourself a pussy? Going, I
think we have to say actually, yes, just so Adam feels better right now.
No, like, no, that would have hurt any man.
Are you a pussy, dude? Are you trying to fight me?
You know what's great? How quickly I deflected my knuckle pain onto it. Would you take this or would you throw your laptop out the window?
I just bumped my knuckle. I mean, Andre the Giant wouldn't have been able to take that. That was serious. This took down a man.
I've been waiting 9 podcasts for him to put me in the same boat as Andre the Giant. But no, like there's certain people and buddies of mine that I'm like, if shit went down, would they get involved? Or would
they?
Like,
I would.
Chris said last time I was here, D'Elia goes, I don't fight, or I would never fight, or I would just not know what to do. But I feel like you would.
I
if you had to.
I've got my ass kicked quite a few times, more than enough times growing up. Mm-hmm. I think when you get your ass kicked is when you know you can jump in because you know what the most painful thing is going
to
be.
You know what to expect.
So you're like,
what sort of moves do they throw on you?
If somebody was attacking you, I would jump in. Yeah. I don't know how well I do, but I'd be saying so much shit, so much talk.
You have to pump yourself up during the fight.
Fucking pussy and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, you kind of have to convince yourself to put yourself in that situation. Like, really, I'm going to make an attempt on someone's life based on the fact that my boy Ray over here just got a drink thrown on him. All right, let's do it.
Yeah.
I won't even think about it. I'll just jump in. I realized, though, I was like, I shouldn't do that anymore. I used to get in fights when I would drink when I was in college all the time.
Really?
All the time.
What kind of fights?
Just fist fights here and there. I'd start shit. Somebody asked me to leave a fraternity house, and I'd be like, say please, like something like that. And it was like, but it was only just drunk stupidity.
Oh, that old story?
You were trying to bring fucking chivalry to the fraternity Greek system?
Could you say please?
You want to open the door for me when I'm stumbling home?
The dude responded. He goes, well, could you please go? And I'm like, say it nicer. And it's like he said please. I should have just left it at that. And then everybody I came with I thought was behind me, and they left. So it was just me and a fraternity looking at me. And then I was just like, you know what? I'm gonna go. You know what I mean? Like,
my decision.
Like I wasn't scared shitless at this point, and then they were just all screaming at me. This was in Rhode Island, University of Rhode Island. Yeah. I didn't even go there. I was visiting, and I just there. But there was a fight earlier. My cousins went there, and his roommate got in a fight. And I guess I didn't get along with these people, and I jumped in on that. I don't even know them, you know, but more like break it up, like get a smack in. I didn't do it.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's your go-to move? Like, as soon as you enter, you have to have a game plan. You're like, am I going people's elbow?
To the forehead.
Palm to the forehead.
I do a violent palm hit.
Do a palm strike like a sassy black woman.
If you do a strike like that, they're like, what does he know? Because that's a punch. It's like is a like everybody.
Krav Maga type shit. Where like, I didn't even say that right, but
and you don't have to actually hit him. You can just come on, and you're like, ooh.
The pop of the bottom of the fist on
you
the
curl
forehead.
The little knuckles, the ones you just hurt, and then you put the palm into the forehead.
Let's be honest,
into
big
the
knuckles.
Hardest part of the head.
That and it makes that nice little slap. That's just kind of like an extra. Forgive the phrase, slap in the face.
It's like this.
Yeah, see? Exactly.
You know, you gotta do shit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, ooh.
I think Ryu in Street Fighter had that in his repertoire.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was the move.
You just had that.
Nobody could see me right now, but it's that.
We should take a picture and tweet it out. It's a great move. Are your headphones on?
I don't know.
There's a button on the left-hand side. Oh.
Well, that would probably help it, because I'm yelling, huh?
Yeah, you are.
Anyway.
Hear yourself now?
Where is it?
There's only one button there.
It's on.
You want to fight, dude?
It's on the side.
Oh, it's on like that?
It definitely did.
On the left hand side. This is
that?
There you go.
Well, no, now I feel it's even worse.
is?
Yeah, what kind of fucking thing is this? God damn it, piece of shit. Sorry for yelling.
Those are Bose headphones, man. Our sponsor.
Well, that's on. This isn't right. on. This is just like...
I know what it is here.
You do?
I think this thing is... There it is. It wasn't in all the way.
Wasn't in all the way?
Yeah.
Oh.
Is that nice there now, Brent Morin?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Maybe you should...
This is what I sound like.
That is kind of the depressing thing, is that you with the headphones, now you know.
I just sound horrible. Can I turn this off?
No, you don't.
Oh, look at this bitch voice. What a boy.
Well, I mean, you are dealing with two professionals right here with very low, rich voices. Yeah.
Yeah, I just...
It's true. You both have very good voices for this.
We get people all the time saying that they can't tell the difference between Adam and I when we're talking.
Yeah.
We don't know how that's possible.
Which makes me feel like my voice, what that tells me is my voice could pass as a dwarf's voice.
Yes. That you can now going out for voiceovers, and now instead of just doing the manly characters that you do, you could be like, all right, I'm going out for the tree stump on My Little Pony Jesus is Magic. I don't know why it's Jesus is Magic.
Wow.
I don't know why it's My Little Pony. I just combined My Little Pony with a Sarah Silverman special. Why did I do that?
Jesus. Because that's the newest play coming out. Everybody knows it's in the breakdowns in L.A.
Also, Brad just looks at me and assumes that like my career is going so well that that's the only voiceover auditions I'm getting is My Little Pony shit.
Yeah.
My Little Pony Jesus is Magic.
Hey, I just saw...
Your name for the camera.
I just watched that documentary on Netflix.
In a world?
The Bronies.
What's that?
The Bronies is all about dudes and like adult dudes that watch My Little Pony. And like they have conventions and stuff.
Jesus, that's
weird. And they have raves and they're dressed up as ponies. And I mean, after the third time I masturbated, that documentary was pretty disturbing.
What an interesting... Who the fuck finds that?
Yeah.
Who and a brony? Oh, what if you were a brony?
You get to tell.
Do you have weird shit like that people don't know that you're into?
Me?
Because you know there's that show, it's like Strange Addiction, where like the people like they eat soap or they fucking, you know, they hump couches.
I'm addicted to fighting.
yeah, but like that's a manly thing. Like you're wearing man. Not. You got a man.
I'm wearing a blue aqua powder blue flannel right now.
and aqua, you know, powder. It's like,
is that even a color?
No, we're just combining words.
But it looks like if a lumberjack had to go on a night out, you know, that's what he wears.
You dress well. Our mutual friend Chris D'Elia, who you are starring with on the NBC show.
NBC. All right.
On the NBC. Wow, this fucking whiskey's already kicking in.
Well, we took a Xanax, too.
A Xanax and a Quaalude. But who's counting? Hug that mic as much as possible, too, so we can hear your voice. Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Hey, you just sang on my album. I can't assume that you would think your voice doesn't sound good.
Well, the singing voice is... See, that's way better than this.
The most bashful backup R&B singer. Still gets quiet.
What's going on, everyone?
Fuck, I wish we were the people.
School de ba ba day.
School de ba ba
day. I don't know how to scat.
Yo, Brent sang... sang some amazing backups on... the only song on my album, Pop Tart Suicide, which you can get right now on iTunes or AdamRayTV.com.
Damn right.
Go to iTunes, NBC, and get yourself Pop Tart Pony, fucking Jesus is Magic. You just die? Like, what happened to Adam?
I know, I'm having troubles.
What a beautiful wording.
That's what you gotta do next, Brent Morin.
Well, who the fuck was that?
I'm a scat man.
Oh my god. That's this song is so good, dude. Remember how
I was about to shit on it and then it kicked in? I was like,
you did have a pause right before you said song was and you said is.
And I was like, never mind, it's great.
Yeah, roller rink time.
Roller rink time, dude. That's fucking. You're good if you're roller skating to this song.
I was gonna say this is like an advanced solo roller skating.
I was fantastic. Are you kidding me? Frontwards, backwards.
Dude, all I want is a visual of Brad, a video of him skating to this by himself, and everyone clears off the floor as this song comes on
because they know. Oh shit, this is Brad Williams time.
Yo, Brad, show me the fucking dance you were doing.
He's coming down, doing a little shimmy.
But that's what so happens. Serious, never smiles. He's never way too serious.
And then just gets off, puts on his coat, turns back on his skates, and does like a finger point shooter gun to everybody. And just
shut
the place down.
And that like made the kids' day. Like one day maybe I could be as good as Brad on skates.
How come there hasn't been a good roller skating movie?
Ooh,
wasn't there Rollerball? Wasn't that with Bow Wow?
Oh, Rollerball.
Let's move on to another topic.
Yeah.
We should just make a fucking roller skating movie.
Would you be in a roller skating movie?
In a heartbeat.
If your show comes out
amazing.
And destroys, and yeah. you
the show the show Undateable.
Yeah. Undateable.
Brent Morin, great friend, great comedian, great actor. Yeah. Great singer.
Thank you.
You got a lot of great things going on. Great basketball player. Well,
give me my
daughter. You're a streaky shooter.
This is what I am as a basketball player. I think I'm Steph Curry, mm-hmm. but I don't make the shots. I play the exact same way, but he makes his. And
oh, okay.
I like a 40-foot three for no reason on a fast break. I'll do it,
you
but then
stop,
I miss.
Pop. Yeah, but sometimes you'll hit six in a row.
Then
man.
Sometimes I'll hit it. That's the problem, though. If I always miss, I'd stop.
Right.
Then I make it. I go, come on, I could do it. And it's like, don't do it, Brent.
You're like that gambler that once in every 15 tries, like just nails a jackpot. You're like, oh,
Kevin Costner and Tin Cup. It's like, let's shoot for
call.
It, hit the goddamn water 55 times, but then he made it.
Who's your cheat caddy?
Oh, I feel good about that. Rick Glassman is.
Rick Glassman.
Also a star of the show. So it's you, Rick, Chris, Ron Funches.
Ron Funches.
Bianca she was... Yeah, she was in
rules of engagement.
Yeah,
she was
gorgeous. Engagement.
The nicest woman in the world. Woman, she'd hate that. Nicest girl in the world.
Girls don't like to be called women.
I don't think she would like to be called woman, but she's beautiful.
Yeah, she's a hot chick. She's married. She's married to my boy Mike Catherwood,
who's amazing.
The yeah. taping I went to, you got to make
amazing.
Out with her.
I didn't get to make.
Oh, that was Bridget. You made out with
Briga.
Whoops, Briga.
This is like Letterman. All his facts are just
Jeff
off.
Galooly. I feel like I'm Leno, what he should have done his last four shows, where he just didn't give a fuck.
Yeah,
and was just like,
care.
So I think you're doing what is this, your show? It's like a Dateable Central, Dateable Fun. It's like, what is it called? Deodorant Pie? What's the name of this
Deodorant
show?
Deodorant Pie?
Yeah, that's the band coming up next. It's a Goo Goo Dolls, Jake.
Yeah, fuck him. I don't care.
Yeah,
we'll
give you shit.
Yeah, we'll give you shit.
Anyway, goodbye. And then he just disappears. Like, what?
Just an abrupt, aggressive goodbye.
What if he just disappeared? What if he had, like, they did that visual effects? He goes, we won't explain it. And we'll just be like, good night and good luck or some shit. And then he just vanished. And everyone went, was he not fucking real?
Like the Foot Clan. Ninja vanished, like throws down the smoke bomb.
And just gone.
Oh,
they do it
great.
In post, but nobody brings it up. Nobody's like, well, is he coming back? It's like,
nobody even like hints at, like, hey, shit went down on Leno. You know, because sometimes shit will go down and then BuzzFeed or somebody will pick up and post something on Facebook being like, something crazy went down on fucking Leno tonight.
Yeah.
What was it like? I got so many questions about the sitcom world. Obviously, I'm a veteran. One episode of According to Jim 7 years ago.
Yeah, so I mean, old. I don't even know.
I watched that episode.
I don't even know. You should be asking the questions, Adam Ray. I mean, this is old news for you.
Yeah.
I should ask you.
Yeah.
Well, it was great.
I mean Brent, do you have any questions about the world that you're about to be coming into to Mr. Adam Ray?
Who was that guy, Jim Parsons? Who was he?
Jim Belushi.
Yeah. Who Henry Winkler told me
shitty, by the
to
way.
Treat like an emperor.
Really?
Yeah, because I, you know, as I'm driving to set, I'm like, all right, the star of Happy Days, I have his number. I should probably call him for some advice. I'm about to do a live taping, which I've never done before, and I have three scenes, and I don't want to fuck it up. Because in your head, one thing like that you think could be the game changer, because you don't know any better.
Yeah.
You're like, it's According to Jim, and then
I mean, so many careers have been built on According to Jim.
That's true.
The pedigree of that show is just unbelievable. It's like Saturday Night Live, According to Jim. That's about
what
it.
What else? And that's it.
Yeah,
but you're that naive, like when you first get out of here. I'm sure when you first got out of here, you were like, I mean, what was...
When I first got out here, I went to film school, and I went with the intentions that I would not graduate. Like, even my mom was like, well, he's not going to graduate. You're going to blow up.
I
thought
hope.
In 6 months I'd be fucking Shia... Not fucking Shia LaBeouf, but I'd be Shia LaBeouf. I thought I was in Disturbia and Trance. I pictured that for me. I was going
to
be the guy doing that.
You have to have that type of unabashed confidence. So your mom was supportive, but not hopeful.
She was way hopeful.
Okay.
Like, when I graduated... You know, graduated high honors.
Whoa.
Well, it's art school. But so I guess everybody did. But either way, my mom was like, congratulations. I was like, yeah, I know. We failed. And it's like college graduate. We're both like, shit, Shia took the career, man. He took that goddamn career from me.
He was really who you like looked up to.
Well, because he's a dude that I saw that I thought, okay, we're like the same height, the same build. We're both, you know, high sixes or sevens. You know what I mean?
You both love taking material from Japanese filmmakers.
I that was my thing. First off, Shia, pronounced Shia. People don't fucking think about this. Is a buddy of mine. Me and him play golf.
Are you serious?
Well, he just walks around and smokes, talks about nature. I play.
You follow him on the course.
Yeah, he
screams shit at him. He responds like, hey, leave me alone, guy. And you're like, we're buddies.
We are buddies.
And are you for real?
Yeah. Voice, you always going to say yeah like four times. Yeah, way too high.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, we play a game sometimes on this podcast called What Will Adam Believe? Because Adam will believe fucking anything
you
tell him.
It's possible sometimes. It is possible where we are in our lives that I could be friends with Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of you on Facebook with like Kristen Bell. So, you know.
Well, you know, with me, when you're dancing in the dark, you got to figure out.
That was going to be the sexiest, weirdest, anecdote.
To it. That's
when
what I would always
in the dark. If the Joker just fucking was hammered and couldn't get it out.
I'll tell you.
Ever dance with the devil when you got your shoes tied on your pants? What's up?
I always used to say on Undateable, because I'm the only one who really drank on the show.
Mm-hmm. On the tour.
Yeah, and on the tour I would. But I'd always say to this guy, David Finn, who's the British guy on our show, plays a gay guy. He's the other guy who drinks, but we never got to drink together. And I'd come in and he'd be like, how was last night? I go, yeah, asking if I danced with the devil. I'm going to tell you I did. Okay? And I was always talk like that. I'd be like, listen, I want to go find some trouble in the shadows and see if we can get lost in some time. And he's like, so he'd be like, would you like to get a drink? And I'm like, oh, are we going to get a drink or are we going to dance? I don't know what we're doing. And I would just disappear. Like if we had like a dinner or something, they go, where are you going to go? All right, I'm going to go get lost. We'll see what happens. I said, if it's a solo dance, it better be a slow song, if you know what I mean. And it's just like,
you turn into the coolest man on the planet.
Love talking like that, because what's funny to me is if we keep going, if we air, and if we have like a season 3 and I'm in rehab, the press conference would be like, Brent, are you going to rehab? Let me tell you something. Sometimes you dance with the devil, you get the horns. Okay? You got to find a way out of that.
Do you already start fantasizing about the
rehab?
Yes. Absolutely. Like where the show could go. It's impossible not to.
It is impossible. I think as comedians, we're lucky because I think every one of us is a little pessimistic. Mm-hmm. So it's like four of us on the show are comics. So anytime somebody's like, they love it, they're da da da. Me, Rick, maybe I don't know about, me and Chris don't talk about that much, but I know Rick and I will always be like, I wonder if we're on a sinking ship. You know what I mean? Like, it's like they're lying to us. That's what I always think.
Yeah.
Well, picture it.
And that has just happened to all of us so many times in this business, where people come up and like, you're on this thing and it's going to go. Yeah. It's the next big, blah, 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 and then it doesn't happen. So you just stop getting your hopes up.
Oh, dude, I wouldn't even, I don't know if you, either of you two remember, but when I got back from doing the heat, I kept myself very, almost like talked it down and didn't want to even talk about it, because in my head, I was like, yo, I could get cut out or significantly cut down.
Yep. Sure.
Like, even though I was
could be
kind of
Brody Stevens at that point.
Like, you just don't know.
You don't know. And you're thinking about it, too.
Yeah.
You're always, and I think that's comedian. I think in comedy, we're used to losing.
Yeah.
So it's like, when you're used to losing, you just think, like, when something good happens, it's like, ooh, shit, that can't
happen.
It'll
be taken away.
What the fuck is going to happen now? Right. That was the most, like, nervous I got. But with that said, you can't help but think, you're on an NBC sitcom, you're like, yeah, this goes, what if this went 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, you're on a network show, you're on a show that where chemistry is huge, because on a lot of shows, I was just talking to somebody about this the other day, how people, you know, want like a workaholics type vibe thing, because they're like, they see how great the chemistry is between those guys, because they knew each other. And you guys, I can't think of another show, quite honestly, in the past handful of years, other than Workaholics, where people are coming in with a built-in chemistry.
Yeah.
Because that's why shows just fail, where they cast these people, and they have the reads in it, and it works kind of, and they shoot it, and then they'll recast, or they'll just go, ah, fuck it. Like, this isn't working.
It
but, like,
work.
You and Chris know each other really
since
well.
Since I was a teenager. I've known him since I was 19.
No shit.
Met at the Ha Ha Cafe college.
On Lancashire.
Yeah. He was like 26 or 36. I don't know how old he is. He's aged. But, you know, he doesn't look good. Take the hair and the beard away. You're seeing a worm. But the point is, go ahead, ladies. He fits jackets well. We get it. It's only because he's got a disproportionate body. Either way, see his calf muscle. See if you still want to fuck him. Either way. This is the kind of shit that Chris and I...
Oh, yeah.
It's like in the show, what's good is like my character is... It somewhat reminds me of when I was like 19,
right,
and when Chris was like 26, because it was a lot of like him and like Jason Collins were the two dudes that I were my first two friends, and they were like the first dudes that were like dudes too.
Jason Collins, the not the gay basketball player.
No, the R&B/gay basketball player. But If you see him play, he's very effeminate. Yeah. But he can
great comic, Jason
man.
Collins. Yeah, that's yeah. what we're
great
talking
comic,
about.
Great comic, America's future, America's dad. But
there you go.
Yes, I think he's America's
Everybody
dad.
Wants to be labeled that, by the way.
America's dad?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. Fuck.
Cosby kind of was. Reginald Bell Johnson kind of was.
What a name that name is, huh?
Alan Thicke is.
Alan Thicke, man.
Is and always
Alan
will
Thicke
be.
Alan Thicke definitely cheated on his wife, right?
Wait, Alan or Robin?
No, Robin, I think, was okay. Alan's got that look of like the dad who fucked all the moms.
He does, dude.
Doesn't he?
And all the son's girlfriends.
Yeah. And he would tell Robin, like, well, you know, you gotta, I don't know how he talks, but like, you know, you gotta
Liam
try.
Neeson, apparently.
You gotta try some pussy. It's like, dad, it's, come on. It's
Mike.
Like, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that girl you got. Was she black? It's like, that's the first thing that he would say. Yeah. Like, dad.
Always wanted
Alan,
to try
call
that.
Me Alan. I'm not old. It's like, yeah, let it's like, it go. You got the hairline of a 14-year-old. You're fine.
But
he hits hard, too. I bet he beats. Never mind. Anyway, I'm just saying that he probably
By the way, Alan Thicke
punch.
Is coming in here after you. So,
really?
Yeah. You need to tone
well,
it down.
He's got a good fashion. Voice. Fuck you, Alan Thicke. I'll get Shia LaBeouf on you. What a good friend of mine.
Wait,
I'm kidding. Alan and I have known each other for years.
If you did have this just like deep-pocketed celebrity like friend collection.
Yeah.
Now, that's a great question. As you continue to grow in this business.
There you go.
And your fame continues to either skyrocket or plummet.
Plummet.
Who would you love to see
your
a picture
dude?
Of you tagged on Facebook with where people were like, where the person tags you in it, you know?
Okay, I know what you
where
mean.
You're not going out of your way. It's like they're like, yo, this is cool. I got this kick it with motherfucking Brent Morin. And that doesn't have to be a black
a
guy.
That voice.
No, that could easily be Ben Silverman, who was also on Growing Pains. He played
that's
the
true.
Son. Ben, or that
very much into hip-hop. Everyone knows that.
Like that. Well, I'd say athletes.
Yeah, I was
going to be like
we talked
Rose.
About this once. Yeah.
Derek Rose, if me and him are good buddies. Mm-hmm. Chris Paul, if me and him are good buddies.
And he goes out of his way. Like,
yeah.
The way our buddy Adam Devine gets recognized at Clippers games.
Yeah.
Which is his team, and then Blake and DeAndre and Chris Paul will look at him and go, what's up, man?
Yeah.
Love the show.
Yeah, that
to
would
me
kill me. That would
is,
drive me nuts.
Oh, man. If Sean Kemp came up to me and was like, yo, dog, the Heat was the shit.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd fucking, it'd be the greatest
I'd
day.
Lose it.
You could be one of Sean Kemp's kids. You don't know that.
You could be.
I think
be.
I do know that.
I don't know.
Well,
I
should have yes-ended that.
Worst improv show ever.
You could
no.
You this. Nah, I couldn't have. Next time,
there's no way I have parents.
Yes, and.
That's
no,
the
you
rule.
Have to do the, damn it, Adam. I am not Sean Kemp's kid. Funny story about this. So we're doing the Undateable Comedy Tour.
Yeah, let's give a quick overview, though, of the show before we get in. Because mm-hmm. we're.
What the show is?
Yes.
Nice. Mm-hmm. This is my favorite part.
Yeah. All right.
So I play.
Great. Thanks for coming on, Brent. Now, tune in next week. We've got Neil Brennan from
we
the Chappelle.
Oh. Out of time. We have Neil Brennan from the, that's his name, by the way.
We like to say a little
friend,
fancy.
Good buddy.
Yeah. Neil Brennan.
The show stars Chris D'Elia, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, and Brent Morin.
Mm-hmm.
And then
David Finn, also.
Created by Bill Lawrence, who created.
Created by Adam
Scrubs.
Steekiel.
Yeah.
Very handsome. Movie writer, wrote Due Date, Project X. He's just got paid the right Where the Millers 2.
Jesus.
He's mm-hmm. just a hot guy, 36, beautiful wife, just had a kid, beautiful kid. Bill Lawrence is showrunner and also creator, executive producer, created Scrub Spin City. Also beautiful wife, 3 gorgeous kids, about 6'4", blue-eyed, brown hair.
I didn't know
46.
A lot of things about
Dude, they need to
wives,
put
Brent
you
Brent.
On all the talk shows,
yeah,
man. You are angry. Killing it with the details.
And that's who they are. And then you got us, a misfit of bandits. You got the big old Jew, Rick, kind of mm-hmm. walking around with the fro and the glasses and the neuroses, but he's got that black confidence, as you know.
Yep.
You got Chris D'Elia, who's just, you know, he's Prince in his mind.
Yep.
That's good for him.
That's good for
Ron
TV.
Funches, America's sweetheart.
Yeah.
So all our ratings and all our trailers and posters should be him. Bianca.
Everything he says is a
K. We're going to call you Bianca K in Hollywood. You got to change that name. Let's make it Keller. So Bianca Keller, she's fantastic. Honestly, one of the sweetest people in the world. Going to be an awesome mother. I tell her that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have David Finn, a British actor, was in one episode of Game of Thrones, but he was also in Ricky Gervais's Life's Too Short. Hilarious episode. Probably the best one of the season. Great improviser as well as actor. Hits the drama notes very well. Briga Heelan, who's in Ground Floor and also plays my love interest in this show. She gets to work both shows. Next Jennifer Aniston. Who knows? But Bill thinks so. Then we have Eva Martino, who's married to Kyle Martino, the famous soccer player. But she's also Susan Sarandon's daughter. Talented actress. extremely down to earth, great shoe game, and sometimes would give you a back massage if you were stressed out on set, which was like, this is an awesome day.
Is she the one that was on Californication?
Yes.
Oh.
Sexy.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Well done,
stunning.
Sir.
And her husband's a great guy, so that's where I'm going to end that conversation.
Okay.
But either
soccer
way,
player.
The show is basically about I play Justin, a lovable loser who owns a bar, and you're probably wondering, how can he own a bar and be a loser? Well, you'll see. Because I kind of mess things up. I dress like Ned Flanders, shirt tucked in, straight edge kind of guy. Talk a little higher, you know, action movies gone. it's fine. We write our own things.
It's all right.
Chris D'Elia plays a womanizer who believes that he's like God's gift to women, but he can't lock down a chick.
Right. So. Yeah, but what part does he play? see what I did there?
I love it.
That's quick.
That's why you run a podcast. That's why I'm on. That's why I'm doing it.
The two of us have to move in together because my bar's not doing well, and his roommate left, and he doesn't want to grow up, and I believe in love, and I'm in love with the waitress at my bar. And he kind of like looks at me. He comes to my bar, and he sees my friends, and he's like, you guys, which Rick Glassman and Ron Funch is playing David.
Yep.
David's recently gay, overweight, doesn't know how to like approach men. And Ron just soft-spoken. He's more open with us, but not with ladies. And Rick just says all the wrong things, but has a lot of confidence in it. And so he kind of sees in all of us that you guys all have your problems, but secretly he has a problem too, and he's just as undateable as the rest of us. And the basic idea of the show, as well as, by the way, Chris's sister, played by Bianca, recently divorced, kind of a wino. And she, which interesting about her character, she's pretty, but she's so self-deprecating and like has a lot of problems, and just like you could see her settling for like a guy she shouldn't settle for.
Yep.
Everybody kind of messes up. It's basically
one of you guys at the end of the season.
Spoiler. You never know. We'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. We gotta see the season.
It's definitely what show would you say for people? Because I went to a live taping and I the what I was just trying to talk about earlier with the chemistry. It's like it's bananas between you guys. Like to see that stuff translate live like that in front of the audience and on TV is I think why the show is going to do really well. And also the writing is great. But you guys like you've told
we get
me, Bill,
to ad-lib, man.
Yeah,
that's one thing on this show that was kind of like I thought so awesome is Bill Lawrence had funny people and he was like, listen, you guys can make this funny. Let's go for it. Chris and I know each other so well. You know, Rick and I know each other so well. I mean,
what do you know about Chris that you're able to play off of?
It's just like I know that if he goes a certain way, I like because we'll never talk beforehand when we're going to ad-lib. We do one take of the script, and if the writers have kind of like an idea, they'll come for the second take and give us like an idea. And if it's really funny, we're like, oh, hell yeah. If not, if Bill doesn't really believe in it, he's like, just go for it. Usually what happens is he goes, all right, we got it. So you guys just want to go for it? We're like, sure. And then we'll go for it.
In front of a live audience.
In front of a live audience,
And let me ask you, how much do you think of your stand-up and everything has prepared you for those moments to where you don't think twice about trusting yourself? Because, like, to just say, hey, go for it, like, and I'm going to give you one chance to improvise something great.
That'll terrify a lot of actors.
They could either get in and make this episode better or not get in and we go, all right, we're going to use what we wrote, which is also great, but you have a chance to really make that moment your own.
You get to go for it. That was one of the things Bianca actually pointed out that she said she, and I never thought about it, but she was like, you know what's interesting about you guys? You're not scared to fail. And as a comic, you can't be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because you're always trying out new material.
There's definitely been times where I've tried something and it didn't work, or one of us did, and the second like they yell cut, like the audience didn't really laugh, and we'll be like, oh, drop that one. And like we're making fun of ourselves. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't take it personal. We're like, all right, let's try something else. It's just like, if Chris does something, I know how to react to him, because my character is definitely more the straight guy in general, and if he's doing some crazy, weird thing.
Chris does a good job of setting the tone, too, because he's pretty fearless, I'd say, is... As much as you,
he's hilarious. Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, it's like you have to like that. I think that's one of the things that that any actor. I mean, in any acting class I've been in, where people just are afraid to take risks and really just like
just try
something. Mm-hmm. And it takes a while to even get to that place. So if you can do that with a lot of money at stake and a live audience and a network going, this fucking better be the next Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty awesome. But
it's so fun. I mean, some of our scenes though will go. We'll just end up going. And it will be like, it's like a 9-minute scene where we're like, I have no idea how you're going to fit that into 22 minutes. But our tape nights were awesome.
You guys do stand up.
We do stand up. We mess with the crowd. Bill Lawrence will talk to like the TV nerds about Scrubs and answer any questions. Mm-hmm. It's a 4-hour tape night. Nobody ever leaves. Everybody stands by the end. And we got to the habit where like our tape nights were like selling out. People were coming.
Because you're getting a free stand-up show. Like the one I went to, you all did a set in between like 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. And these people, like no show. I went to a tape of friends my freshman year of college when I got out here.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was the best. But like in between, like they would, you know, banter, and every now and then
look up to the audience, but right. they never yeah. like the, and obviously Friends was hugely popular at that point, but still, if they'd even gotten up and addressed the crowd and done a Q&A, people would have lost their minds.
Awesome. Shit.
Let alone David Schwimmer doing like some stand up.
Imagine if he did. Hey guys. Yeah, I'll do Schwimmer.
No, I'll do Schwimmer. No, Schwimmer's like, Hey, Rachel's guy. Hey, you ever know something? And then Ray Romano comes in and goes, I got this, man.
That's hey, good.
Yeah. No, right. Both of those are terrible.
Hi, guys.
But like,
it's David Schwimmer.
Is that like Harry Carey doing David Schwimmer?
Hi, everybody.
See, we're all killing
right stand
now.
Up. Yeah,
this is the show. This is the show.
This is why we hang out, man.
Yeah. But that is so great that they allow you guys to do that, because I've been to sitcom tapings where they have some out of work for the last 30 years comic who does audience warm up.
It's a tough job.
It's an amazingly tough job. Yeah. So you see a guy,
I got a lot
like,
of respect for that.
So you see a guy like Brody Stevens who does it so amazingly well. Yeah. It's so much respect for him.
Yeah, he's a game changer.
But yeah, and then like it's their job to keep the audience entertained when they're seeing a take, but it's
one
time.
Person. That's what you're trying to say, right? That
one person.
Yeah. We have that guy, and we would just go up and be like, give me the mic. And he's like,
he loves
it.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Of course, take it away.
Take the attention off me for a few minutes, because I've just done my fifth dad versus dad dance for chocolate.
I couldn't imagine doing that gig, but yeah, he'll just sit back, relax. He was a cool dude. And we would just, you know, sometimes it kind of backfired though. Like if you went for it, like I tried not to do traditional stand-up a lot when I was like, sometimes we'd have behind the scenes camera crews try a few bits. Mm-hmm. I just felt that like for me, I wanted to like improvise or mess with the audience or come up with something new. Like Rick and I would grab the mic and do something stupid or, you know, but like there was a time where everybody just started doing material and I was like, all right, I guess I'll do material. And I know Chris did it once. I think it was the night my parents were there and I went before him. And because my parents are there, I just roasted my dad and like the audience lost it. Yeah. I don't know if he was just trying to be funnier than me, but then like three scenes later or just like show my parents up. I don't know. But he just takes the mic and does like a like special energy, like our special energy
of his best bits
of material crushes.
Oh, Jesus.
Then it's me and him in a scene and like the far my office, which is away from the audience, too, so that's already against us.
Yeah, if you haven't been to a sitcom taping, they have all like the main sets are all in a long fraternity row. Right. So it's like from one end is like the bar, then the middle is a bedroom, then an office, then
it's rotating or anything.
We do the first off, we start it and we do the scene. No laughs.
Exactly.
And then Chris,
what's that like, by the way?
It's just weird. You just sit there like, oof, because it's stand-up. Because
you know that's where the joke's is supposed to be.
And that wasn't there. And the funny thing is, they say, Ed, cut. And Chris goes, man, I'm tired. Because he just did 20 minutes of stand-up. Mm-hmm. And I went, well, congratulations, Chris. You just made us follow you. And, then, you know, and he was like, oh, shit, you're right. So, but that got the audience into it a little bit.
Yeah, great, dude.
You can always get them back.
And because you guys come from the world of stand-up comedy, you're willing to take risks when it doesn't work. Whereas if a traditional actor is out there and then the lines don't work, they just go, well, these are the lines I was given. This is what I have to work with. Whereas you guys are more like, yeah, I'll take some chances.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's have some shit happen.
I kept jokingly saying to the writers,
I would suck my dick,
you fucking idiot.
Jokingly.
Give him noogies and shit. They're like, Brad, I'm a dad. I'm like, whatever. I don't give a fuck about you. Star. But I would look at the script and go, this is funny. Where's my comedy fall? And I kept saying, like, I wanted a comedy fall, like my John Ritter comedy fall.
I was just going to ask, is that a sitcom guy you've looked
Dick
up?
Van Dyke.
Yeah, I love John Ritter. And I was like, I want my comedy fall. I need a comedy. I was jokingly said it. And then they put in, like, a fall.
The episode I went to, you...
Where did I fall? I fell. Let me tell you.
You walk up the stairs. By the way, you're great at that. That
I
is
love
not,
doing that.
Dude,
shit.
If you make a fake fall look fake...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's awkward.
Get off the set, man.
Yeah.
Dude,
Ritter was the best, and hey, man, your fall was great. I remember watching and the first time, because I knew it was coming, just the way like things were going, and you were walking up the steps, and you had a lot of confidence, I think, before you turned around.
Yeah.
And you went into the last one you did, hopefully they keep, you tripped, and not to spoil anything for the listeners, but you tripped and you fell into a bush, and you and you grabbed part of the plant, and then came up with part of the plant, and then still did up and did like another like shooter fingers back to the girl. Oh, it was great. Dude,
I would get like amp game day, because like sometimes we do a take, and if I felt like there was one where like Chris and I believe Rick are carrying my like a desk into my office.
Yeah.
Because Chris is like trying to act like he owns part of the bar now. Right, and I don't like
he,
it.
And like so, he lifts weights in real life. Yeah.
So I'm trying to I was supposed to just jump on the desk,
yeah,
you know, to stop them from moving it and then continue talking. So we did one take of that. Didn't really get a laugh or anything. And I didn't tell anybody, but I was like, I think I want to fall over this desk, you know, but there was no room between like the booth. Like there was like a sharp end to the booth. There was like a little room, but I noticed like during the scene that the thing wavered a little bit. So there was a little room. So I just did it. One of the best falls I ever had because I went jump.
You think like, that in your head, don't you?
Yeah, I was like, oh, come on, you got this. I go, there's a little space because I said, I can't do it. Don't do it. You're going to hit your head on the thing on the bottom and
yeah,
it's mm-hmm. going to be surgery. And then I literally had a little bit of window and I go, fuck it, do it now. And I went, no. And I slid and then fell and hit the ground on the other side. And then the whole audience goes, oh, and like laughs. Mm-hmm. And then I pop up because I knew I was going to do it and yeah. I just continued the scene. But I was like, that's, and it just, things like that, where it's like, then like Bill Lawrence comes out and I'm like, oh shit, I wonder if he's mad because I should tell people I'm doing that,
right?
Especially directors. Mm-hmm. And they were like, awesome, stay there. We got to get a pickup here. Like, so hopefully they use it.
But, oh, so they totally adjusted for you.
Yeah, they. I broke the couch once too, which was like the couch, like Chris supposed to throw a coffee mug on my head and I'm supposed to like take it and be like, ah, and then the girl's like, what? And I'm like, nothing. Woo, I'm excited. Like, da-da. And I knew I didn't tell anybody. I was like, I'm going to go over this couch. So it hit me and then I hit the couch and the couch like snapped out and I just fell over the couch, like almost like it was a prop couch. And then the props had to come in and like fix the couch like NASCAR. And I felt bad because when I worked at Conan, you got to let the prop guys know what you're going to do because
right.
it's on them. They look bad. And like, I remember that's why I went to them. I was like, I'm so sorry, guys. I'm like, are you fucking kidding? That was hilarious. And I'm like, oh my God, I love this job.
Dude,
that's why I want to keep doing it, man. That thing was so fun.
Well, the like, freedom they're allowing yeah. you to also, but like stay within the lines of everything you do with the improv and stuff.
Yeah.
But to like, and that's again why I think the show is going to do well, because I think Bill is recognizing that, oh, I cast guys who are like multifaceted and I'm not just going to make them do what, you know, the people we've hired to do. And it's,
yeah.
it sounds like also you have writers that are yeah. selfless enough to be like, oh, these guys can improv and are dope
yeah,
comics.
Yeah, they loved it, man. Yeah.
So I mean, let's be collaborative because, and just yeah. make the best thing possible and not try to make it like,
they
hey.
They loved it too, dude. Like the writers too would get amped because they knew on tape night they could think of something and they're like, oh, dude, even off something you ad-lib, they'll be like, oh, what if you did this
I
too? And you're
say,
like,
yeah.
fuck yeah.
That's gotta be.
Fuck yeah, dude. That's like, it was like a just, it was like a fraternity. You're like, yeah, yeah fuck yeah, let's all do it.
It's a comfortable experience. And so many times you hear about comics that get parts on shows and like you were hired to be funny
yeah.
because you're funny uh-huh. because you're a stand-up comedian, you're a professional, you are funny for a living, it's all you think about. And then you have showrunners and managers come like, all right, well, what I think would be funny yeah. is, and then it's just fucking awful. I don't know why I turned him into like every bad guy in the Muppet like, movie, but that's what I did.
Like they're just
choice
dying.
I made.
That was like a manager's dying wish, like, well, if I had it my way,
what I would do with those whippersnappers,
you would have fallen on the couch. You would have done the Baskin Robbins commercial.
Fuck, I guess we got to do the fall. He's going to die. We have to
wait. So,
thank you.
So who's the guy that you would want to be tagged in the photo of?
It would be Derrick
Undateable.
Rose,
yeah.
Chris Paul, Steph Curry.
All athletes.
Sure.
Yeah.
All fucking athletes. Mostly yeah. basketball players, too.
So other actors and movie stars don't impress you?
You know what? There's something about actors and musicians. And this sounds cocky, but I just feel like I could do that. You know what I mean? Or I'm
right.
I'm in the business of that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
As opposed to like athletes, it's like, oh my God.
No way.
I
yeah.
look up to you literally. And like also,
yeah.
you're just awesome.
Yeah. That, you know? And that's why one of the reasons I love sports so much is that no one got on the Miami Heat because his dad
yeah,
knew
yeah, yeah.
the owner of the team or whatever. Like, no, you're at that level because you can do something better than anyone else on the planet.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
LeBron. I'm not going to mention LeBron. Yeah. LeBron would be, I would.
Yeah. If he like tagged you in a photo, like,
hey, this is me and Morin.
Dude,
like Adam told me that Woody Harrelson is a fan of Workaholics.
What?
Like that.
That's
like,
kind of cool. All yeah, right. There's yeah, certain yeah. Jack Nicholson or some dude like
come
that.
Come on.
Fucking
right.
Snap.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Hanks,
having dinner.
Tom Hanks fucking DMs you and just goes, hey, son, dateable. You got yeah. great timing. Like,
way to go.
Sure.
New me. Like Tom.
Greatest wow. compliment ever.
Wow.
Way to go, new me. Okay. Well, that was my next question.
I would cry.
Who do you think you are going to be the next?
I'm the next Tom Hanks. Goddamn.
I like it. Started
way
off.
Way to go, new me is the best.
Started off with bosom buddies.
Such a cocky dickhead I am.
Right.
It's like, I'm in a sitcom that has no air date. And I'm like, I'm the next Tom Hanks. Friend, you're 27. It's the first job you booked.
Got like, it.
Well, whatever. Jay-Z didn't start till he was 26. Jay-Z would be a fun friend, too.
Yeah.
Just because you could like, get free shit. Like
fuck
Tom
yes.
Ford stuff.
Do you still love, can you start stand-up how long ago?
When I was 18, 19.
Okay. And what was your first, back in Connecticut?
Here.
here. Oh, you started out here. You didn't do it in college.
No. Well, I did do it in college.
Well, yeah, that's right. Film school in L.A.
Yeah.
What was the first gig like?
It was a Laugh Factory 3-minute open mic.
Oh, you and I both started there.
Yeah, I didn't know
first
where else
ever
to
show.
Go.
Yeah.
So I just did that.
And isn't that funny that when you start, there's like, you don't know what, you don't have any older comedian mentors to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
You don't know about Googling for the shows, like finding open mics. You're just like, oh, I see a place. I should probably just go there.
Wait,
was that a line?
For 3 hours. I waited in line. Three minutes.
For 3 minutes. And old Harvey announces your name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Harvey.
And now we have another comedian. Let's get a round of applause for Brent Morin.
No swearing. You know? And then you're like, oh.
I know, I said tits the only time I did it. And then Jamie goes, body, you're so dirty, body. You said tits. Yeah. It was a joke about me being a fat kid and me being teased. And I go, everyone thinks being teased as a fat kid is awful. But there are actually a lot of benefits. I was the first one in the fourth grade to get a set of tits. I go, I would charge my friends $5 to fill me up in the lunchroom. I go, Kit Kats weren't cheap, you know,
and
make some extra candy money, and nobody laughed. And then
I like that joke.
So do I. I don't do it anymore.
You're traumatized for it.
I don't do personal fat kid stuff anymore. Now it's just about like my not wanting my nieces to get fat, so I project my problems with like snacks onto like
problems with snacks. Sounds like a book that the Berenstain Bears like. Berenstain Bears and the problems with snacks.
Yeah, Papa Bear's
the
like
real life true story of the Berenstain Bears. Problems with snacks.
You know, I did that, right?
What?
I did that as a video, a sketch. Any true Hollywood story?
That's right.
I remember that.
I remember you did that. It's after the you know, in my head
took that from us.
Problem with snacks.
In my head, I thought it was going to go viral because I'm like, because the woman was her Stan and Jan Berenstain, and she had passed away, and I was like, I'm going to make this fake E2 Hollywood story that showed like the dark side that nobody knew about the Berenstain Bears.
Yeah.
I thought that would go viral, man. But it turns out nobody gives a fuck about Stan and Jan Berenstain.
That's sad. That's sad because Stan and Jan Berenstain are American treasures in my opinion.
It's bullshit.
Thank you for the Viking funeral they deserve.
What was like the first bit you did at that open mic? Do you remember?
I think I do. I said it was, oh man, speaking of bears, I know what it was.
Fuck yeah.
I said, I'm not scared of horror movies, film school kids. So of course it was a fucking movie.
Sure.
And
it's what
like,
you know.
Yeah. I was like, horror. Thanks. I didn't know much at 18, 19.
Justifying your shitty material.
Yeah. I said,
what
I was
you
just
know,
thinking
man.
About it's like if Harvey interviewed me. Sure, kid, it's what you know. You know? I'm like, yeah, you're
so
right. Don't be scared. Just tell us how you feel. Thank
oh,
you.
Harvey.
I said,
can I put my hand here? Yes.
I said, horror movies today make it so you're not scared of the killer anymore. I'm only scared of those little girls and their dolls. And I acted out like if I had a daughter and she's like, Daddy, can I get it? Like, and I was like, no dolls. Fuck that. You're getting a bear. That's what I said. And I was like, because teddy bears aren't scary. And I went to a song about the Care Bears.
Sure.
And
there you go.
And I was like, real bears are terrifying, but regular bears. And it was, and I'm like, well, you guys know what I mean?
For sure.
Harvey's like, Brent Maher. Like,
that was your one joke.
I love how you also don't know how to close out your set at that point.
Yeah,
so you wait for those silence, and then he just goes, that's all.
Yeah
right.
I told everybody it was my first time, though, so it was so supportive. They're like, way to go.
Nice.
You know? So it was really good, like, cheap way for me to not.
Now, what part of you, when you got off stage, because for all comics, there's got to be something in you that goes, well, that feeling sucks. Now, do I want to
do it again? Never do it again.
Yeah.
Dude, I thought I was like too competitive, and I was like, I can't go out like that. Cause I always thought I'll try it so I could say I tried it. Like,
cause you're a writer,
kids.
Right? You were, what was
I was
your
in screen. Yeah. I was majored in screenwriting and directing.
I love the reason that you always say that you did stand up is because
of writing. Cause I was in film school in writing class, and all the guys I was looking up to, like Albert Brooks and Woody Allen and even like Judd Apatow or any guys like that, I realized, oh, they all did stand up.
Yeah. At some point, at least tried it.
And I thought like, and I went to a live stand up show at the Laugh Factory cause I couldn't do anything at 18 and my school didn't really have a campus for like parties. And
that's
I was
not
like,
true. Have you never played Uno or Twister? Jesus Christ, dude. Think outside the box.
Drunk Uno.
Open a game,
fucked up, dude.
Open a game of Boggle for once.
But I was like, you know what? The first thing I wrote in screenwriting class, I was so nervous. Everybody had to read it and criticize it. And the criticism was so not it was all like, good, it's good. And it's like, it's not good. I'm 18. There's no way this is good. So then I was like, I want to try stand up. And then I did it. I sucked because I wanted to see if I was funny.
Yeah.
Because you think you're funny in high school, but are you funny? Can you do this?
It's also different, like writing something down on paper and having somebody read it and think it's funny versus
and also reading it in a class where they're not exactly expecting it to be funny, so it comes out of nowhere. Whereas, the audience sitting there like, you have to be funny right now.
Yeah, it was a really weird thing, but I realized like, it helped so much with writing in general because it like got me to the point. Because when you're doing stand up, I realized I would talk for 4 minutes till I got to my punchline or something, mm-hmm. and I was like, and then that, and then people are like, the fuck was it? I forgot the beginning of the fuck, and it's like shit. And so you realize you learn
about shoes or birds.
Like, you learn how to cut things out. You learn how to. And my stand up is all scene anyway. Everything's dialogue. It's always me with somebody else. Just the way I always think or write. You know, even when I'm doing shit here with Harvey. You know what I mean? Like it's just I'm used to dialogue driven. Comedy.
Is there a performer background? Like, did you plays and stuff? Like,
no, I shot a lot of short films and stuff. And then I would, anytime I joke growing up, I was always doing stuff like pretending to be a friend and me in a conversation. And I would just do it for 2 hours.
So you must have been a great storyteller.
I got better. Actually.
And very lonely in high school.
My stand-up has gotten better. Yeah, creative just making people. Up friends. Yeah. What do you want to do, Sean? Well, do whatever, man. You're not going to make the team this year. Fuck you. I will make the team.
Sean's always being like that. I know, yeah. Tyrone. Hey, when'd you get here, man?
Yeah, you do that too in your act too, where you talk. That's just more fun for me.
It
to
is.
Kinda can have multiple people.
Dude, doing act outs is. I mean, for why I started doing stand-up is because I was doing so much theater, and I was like, the live fix of doing theater, like musicals in high school was awesome. But I was like, I don't. You get to a point where you're like, I played Danny Zuko in Grease in high school, and my voice was pretty good.
Yeah,
but the jump from high school to college musical theater is pretty. Is a nice little jump, and then if you want to go to college to Broadway or something professional, you got to be ridiculous.
So
I was like, but I still love the audience part. And I was like, I need that live fix. Like, it's a fucking rush.
And they'll let anyone on stage and do stand up.
Hey, dude, to try at least. And then I mean, that's what's great about it. And so, but yeah, like I definitely do act outs as you do too, because it's like, it's fun to also, when I tell stories, I see those people so vividly.
Yeah.
And you're so great at that and very unique in it, where you'll have these long 4 minute rants where paint a whole scene, but you've gotten, I think, a lot better, as you say, when you start out and you would do a whole 4 minute thing and people would go, what was that about? But now you've cut a lot of fat and you can, your beats are there. There's a lot of jokes in between. And sometimes, dude, you do it so fast. I can't even like remembering people are already fascinated by comedians being able to remember all their material and like all the moments and everything. But it's like when you do those rants, it's like shit, man. Like sometimes I'm like, and sometimes you're making them up or the beats and adding things, but you're so locked in.
You're ad-libbing, but you're into it.
Yeah. Do you ever even think, like, what am I going to say next? Or are you just so into it that you're just
I'm like when the kid's yelling at his mom because he missed the bus and can't get his dick sucked on the bus, when I'm doing that argument where he's like, you got 9 iPads in the house, you can't set one alarm for me. Like, I'm not thinking what could the kid say in the moment. Where he's like, I'm mad, you should have set the alarm. I'm having kid dreams up there. You think I'm going to fucking wake up? Now I got a test, I'm going to be all off, you know, like I'm jerking off in the car. It's like, no, you're not. Yes, I am.
And here's the thing.
Like, I'm not thinking about like, oh shit, what's next? I'm thinking like, I'm that guy for this.
You're the kid.
Yeah.
And I'm always amazed when like a comic actor or comedian does like a dramatic role, and everyone's like, wow. Like when Dice just did a
Blue Jasmine.
Yeah, and he's great in that. Mm-hmm. And people are like, wow, this funny guy did a dramatic role. Yeah, no shit.
Because
when we're playing 9 parts on stage, and we have to create the dramatic moments to then have the funny moment in the end. It's like, that's why we're good at that.
Yeah. It's like I did that bit at the Improv recently, and I, you know, the piano was there, and I put my glass up there, and I was just in the midst of this kid, and I'm like, God damn it, mom! And I hit the piano, and the fucking glass smashed on the ground. But I didn't. I was as the character. I go, great! Now I spill my fucking juice. You know what I mean? And it was like, people were like, did you mean to do that? I was like, no, but it was in the moment.
You stayed in the pocket, as Brennan says.
Because you're like, fuck it. He's great too, isn't he? That's a storyteller, by the way.
Who are guys that you once
That's
you started?
A storyteller, by the way. Shut the fuck up, Brett. You think Brett needs your publicity,
dude? You're
doing fine.
You know, here's one thing I really love about you, and I think people, as you keep, you're great in this in interviews too, like you did a little piece for Last Call, Carson Daly, and like you're obviously a cool guy, but like you're obviously confident, but you're
Adam and I are drinking, by the way, so I feel like
we're like we're 2 steps away from I love you, man. Fucking
well, I wasn't gonna say
you're
it, but
awesome. Here's why you're great. You come in with a great shirt with a great smile. You got your beards always trimmed. Your pants are always groomed and cleaned.
I don't know why you're turning into Johnny Depp all of a sudden.
Man, my pants was my biggest insecurity.
Johnny Depp, that's a guy that I would want to tag me in a phone on Instagram. If he just sent me a voicemail and was like, Adam, I just wanted to tell you, first of all, I saw you were going to read the stage play of Chocolat, and I want to tell you, don't do it as me as the pirate, but do it as me from Donnie Brasco.
That's good.
Or from Basketball Diaries, which I was not in, but I did read for. My friend Leo got it. Anyway, get fucking Benny and June.
Get Benny and June.
Get Benny June. Hold on, I'm just reading my IMDb page right now.
No, but
I was gonna. No, it's so funny. You beat me to doing the Johnny. I was gonna do a Johnny Depp.
You can't do
yours. Is
Depp
pretty fucking good.
Well, my voice already lives in that low register for me to get down like that. And it's also it's also him as a pirate. Also, but he
generally
talks. I don't watch my own movies, Oprah. I don't. I saw Finding Neverland in the theater, but because I had to, and because I like popcorn. But you know, but in the last Call to Carson, the other thing, you do a great job, and I think this is really important for all comics who are innately confident, like to be somewhat self-deprecating, like a little bit, so that people go, "Man, I like that you are confident."
And he's one of us.
Yeah, he's one of us. But
people
like,
are flawed.
If you're so, I don't know, you want to also be like, you can fucking relate to the, or like go up and talk to them afterwards.
Yeah,
and sometimes. You know, I don't know who would be a good example. I feel like maybe Dane, when he got to the height of his shit, probably felt like people that they couldn't even like approach him because he was this like massive juggernaut of confidence and fucking just you know,
selling out stadiums. Yeah,
but like you do a good job of knocking yourself a little bit for stuff that like, and I think innately comedians and actors are all a little whatever. People in general have like flaws and insecurities, but comedians are all a little bit more willing to talk about them on stage.
Yeah, you're more open to them, and people ask like, what is your comedy? And I was like, well, it's all personal, you know, there's something there's something that happened to me, and then it's an embellished idea of something I've either done or like a thought process about like wanting to be in love and not being in a relationship, not being ready for a relationship, things like that. But also I said it's calling out that voice in your head where it's like, I found that out in life just from like dating or certain things. Like if you're at dinner with a girl and you're like, no, that's cool. Cool. No, it's really cool. And in your head, you're like, why the fuck do I keep saying cool? I realized I could call that out and I'll be like, sorry, I keep saying cool. You know what I mean? Like last night I was having a drink with this girl and I was exhausted and I just wasn't in it. And 30 minutes into it, I was just like, well, look, you know, maybe next time I'll be a little bit more charming. I get it. I asked you about where you were from about six freaking times, you know, but pointing that out, she was like, oh my God, I wasn't going to say anything, but yeah, you were really boring.
And guess what? That probably broke the ice. And,
yeah,
and
right. Then I got that fucking, oh, I couldn't finish that because it got way too cocky.
And then I put on a Blu-ray of Pirates of the Caribbean 2 and started listening to the soundtrack from Benny and June.
Then she drove me home.
Turns out she was an Uber driver.
Yeah. And I said, hey, you want to come in? And she said, no, I can't. And I said, hey, come on in.
For real?
And then she said, no.
For real?
I went in, got home by 12:30, high school style. Just fucking watched by DVR.
Do you
30 for 30, Rec Room of the Big East.
But do you have a closing line if you get to that point, when you get to the door?
I stopped thinking about lines when I was like early 20s, and I realized, you know what? All I have to do is be honest, listen up front, and that's it. And believe in me. And that was it. So I'll just say like,
I am the next Tom Hanks.
So I would say, why don't you come in?
That's his closing lines. Well, hey, just so you know, baby, you're
Colin Hanks.
Date.
I meant Colin Hanks. Fuck, I just realized. Tom is the Thomas. Thomas is the guy from Saving Private Ryan. Thomas. He's fucking good. But Colin, I'm thinking about being Colin. I could be Colin.
Yeah, you talk a lot about
Dexter.
Sure. Oh boy.
Who the fuck was that, dude?
Oh boy.
Don't just make that voice without any sort of context or prerequisite.
That's Colin, isn't it?
Colin Hanks?
Colin!
I don't know. It sounds like a Disney character to me.
Oh my God, what are we going to do, boys?
It sounds like a guy who was auditioning to play Mrs. Potter, the teapot in Beauty and the Beast, and comes in with a completely different take. He goes, I know you guys want a woman. I know you want her to be British. I know you want her to sound like Angela Lansbury, who apparently I heard you got the offer out to. I'm here anyway. I know this is fucking just like, because I know one of the producers and he doesn't want to make me not come in because we're buddies. But here's what I'm thinking. Whoa, boy! And they
that
go,
was good.
Hey, man.
How did you get reverb on that without hitting reverb? Whoa, boy!
He's that good.
Beauty and the Beast.
Fuck yeah.
Thank you for coming in.
What's your favorite Disney movie?
Disney movie.
Everyone's got one. Anyone who goes, man, fuck Disney.
Emperor's New Groove.
Dude, great call.
Beware the Groove.
Spade is so good in that.
Goose Goes Sus. I like that guy. The security guard played by Putty. He was a good Putty. No. He's like, Goose Goes Sus. Goose Goes Adventure. Just the way he talked is so funny to me. Well, we gotta get
I'm sorry, you've thrown off the Emperor's groove.
Is that one of the lines?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's a line.
You thrown off the Emperor's groove, yeah.
What would you want to be the voice of in an animated film?
Aladdin. No, not Aladdin. The Beast. Not the Beast.
No, no, no. Not something that's already happened.
Oh.
Self-editing.
Looking forward.
I would like to be... That's a good name for a Disney movie. Looking forward, I could play a prince.
There you go.
This is who I really like. I know that she is just a couch, but her, she just started talking. I want to do one of those so bad.
Oh, my God. Well, you're already prepped for it.
I could say that there's time. Just stealing other songs.
Oh, yeah.
Something, 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 something. I'm in love with a couch.
It's a boy who's in love with a couch because he's hitting puberty and he doesn't quite yet know how to use his dick.
That's true.
And the couch... is voiced by
Tim Allen.
Yep. Is, wow, going in a different direction.
Yeah.
So the boy doesn't know that the couch is gay, but the boy also doesn't know that he's gay yet. And he's like, I keep, and Tim Allen's like, you keep humping me on Friday nights. Don't you know it's Shabbat? Don't you know it's Shabbat? The kid's like, I'm not even Jewish. What is Shabbat?
Jewish couch.
Oh, me and the couch were having good times. I didn't know that you were a guy. Now I must put it in. Little kids are like, what's going on? I don't know. My, this is the worst movie we've ever seen.
The mom comes in.
Trent Morin.
Why your pants off? Why your pants off? Why your pants off? Why your pants off?
Is that a tough lamp, like street lamp? Just hey, what are you doing fucking the couch? Oh, you gotta fuck that couch. Like, oh my God.
Oh, you gotta fuck that couch. And like six, like street New York-y cabbie lamps.
He's giving him advice the whole damn time.
Oh, fuck that couch. Da, da, da. You know, the big closer.
You gotta put your balls on the armrest.
And now turn on the TV. And then just 2 minutes of them watching TV going, oh, good, good. I didn't know that was out.
And Tony Danza is the pillow. Hey, how come nobody fucks me? I was here first. I was here first.
Calm down, pillow.
I'm a pillow from another couch. But I still fit on this one, color-wise.
Color-wise.
Oh, so it's got, like, it's got tones of like racial tones.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Brett Morin says, we took a risk, and I'm standing by it. Dancing with the Devil was worth it. Nobody knew what he meant. He just went to rehab.
That was like the female Morgan Freeman. Nobody said he went to rehab, but he
nobody
did.
Female. Fuck, man, this voice. I'll get it down. I'm going to get it down.
Female Morgan Freeman.
Hey. Fuck. Just do a movie. I just want to do one movie like, where is my daughter? No. Ew.
You're doing like Christian Bale Batman now.
Jason Connery.
That does seem like the best part to do. I think because comedy, like, you have to start thinking, like I was saying about fantasizing what the show would lead to, but movies obviously is the next jump. And it's awesome. Like Chris wants to be an action star.
He does.
And I think he will be.
He could be. He's got the voice.
He will be.
We used to do voice notes back and forth to each other, like lines from like movies. Like he did one that made me laugh. I remember he sent me one where he's like pretending he's in a fucking big shootout. And he goes like, if you got those extra bullets, now would be a good time to use them. But he does it. He did it so fucking spot on.
Yeah.
I lost it. I go, dude, that sounded so like one of those guys in that movie. He goes, yeah, I know.
He knows that genre so well that it's if you just give him a script that he can like, I don't know, some sort of Beverly Hills Cop-ish. Maybe Beverly Hills Cop meets Chocolat.
Aren't they doing a remake as a TV show? Wasn't Brandon T. Jackson in that?
Brandon T. Jackson,
Did that get picked up?
I don't know. Why don't you call your friends at NBC? You're in.
Yeah, well.
You know.
We don't have an air date yet.
Get him on the line, buddy.
You know what?
What is that like?
You know what? I had a drink. I'm going to call him right now.
Yeah.
Brent.
Hey, fuck you, NBC. Shit.
Can you imagine? You have one voicemail from Brent Morin.
Hey, guys. I don't know if you're... Oh, fuck. Give me a minute. Just rustling around.
No, this is you doing the voicemail. You're calling
hey,
yourself...
Hey, guys. So, it's me. That's all I'm going to tell you. You should know who this is. I tell you, when you call, you kind of lose your nerve a little bit. Just calling to say love ya. Looking forward to promo time. If I could do Fallon, it'd be great. We'll both giggle. Maybe I can play the beer pong thing, the challenge he does. Do you guys ever feel like he just lets them win? Because I feel like he could beat them. I don't know.
Boop. If you are satisfied with your message, please press 7.
Try it again.
Yeah, you do it like 9 more times.
Hello, NBC. Brent Morin here, star of, second on the call sheet of Undateable. Chris D'Elia is the star, or D'Elia, whatever you pronounce it. Doesn't matter. He's 6'3". Either way, Fallon, what I was saying is, does he just let other people win? I'm just curious, like, I know he's got to be the nice guy, but, you know, you can beat Lindsay Lohan. Put some more water on her face. We don't want to see it. Anyway, I completely forgot why I called. I got to go. Fuck. Oh, fuck you guys. I'm kidding. I love you. Oh, my hold.
This is the NBC hold song.
NBC hold song. Yeah.
But you still got to talk over the voicemail.
I would call every day.
I always am curious what people do in the holds of
Yeah, NBC, got this shit, man, this is me. Gonna tell them how I feel. How do I feel? Pretty good. Pretty good. Because they gave me a job. Was a PA before that. And I used to get coffee. And now I get coffees. And that's pretty cool. Got a cool hat.
Bye. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
This is NBC.
This is just NBC.
Yeah, no, we actually had you on speaker the whole time.
Oh, fuck.
Brent, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Is alcohol going to be a problem for you this season?
Let's just say when you dance with the devil, sometimes you put on the wrong shoes.
Okay, 1 second, Brent.
Okay. Fuck. You dance with the devil, you put on the wrong shoes? Can you fucking figure it out, Brent? Shit.
Yo, going back to
holds.
You're brilliant, dude. That's what's so great. When you get on that hold music, for sure sing the song
you
in your head.
To. You're like, this
confident,
is pretty good.
Man. Even if it's classical, you're like, I wonder if I could ever be in a classical band.
Oh, I love it. Wow. I love you, NBC, by the way. Thank you for giving me a career.
Yeah, dude.
Or at least, start.
The start of a career. And we're all anxious as hell.
I just want
to
be Jake Johnson.
Who doesn't want to be Jake Johnson?
He's killing it right now.
He's killing it, dude.
He's kind of. He's good.
Wait, now, NBC, though, you've been a part of that family for a while.
Yeah. I work for The Tonight Show with Conan.
Yeah,
as a production assistant.
Before we get out of here, we got about 10 more minutes left.
Nice.
I want to hear some Conan stories. Mm-hmm. You were a PA on Conan.
Was, yes.
Yeah.
For that and for The Conan Show. And I was mainly Andy Richter's stand-in. That's what I did. I'd play him in blocking rehearsal. Or if we had a guest on the show that was like in makeup like Pee Wee Herman, I'd play him with Conan and Andy or something. And
would you put on a Pee Wee voice or were you not?
No. They always wanted me not to. I found that harder to do than just being in a show. Because in a show, you get to just act and go for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But with that stand-in, like, you got to do a decent job because the writers want to hear a little bit of the timing, but you don't want to act. So it's kind of like the cool kid in the play in school where he's got the hands in the pockets and he's kind of doing it. You know, he really wants to, but he can't.
He can't.
He's just kind of like, well, I don't know, Conan, what do you think? And it's just like, all right, Brent, you know? But they were so good. Once Conan starts making fun of you, you know he likes you. So when he would call me murderer and just like creep and stuff, then you're like, yeah, I'm in.
How early on was that?
It was what?
How
early on?
Yeah.
Probably at the end of the Tonight Show, towards the end of the Tonight Show, because I always had to be on camera with them and stuff. So they kind of started making fun of me, like Richter, and they're the nicest people ever. I mean, Conan's such like a mentor.
And then how do you even get that job for our listeners? They're like, I want to be a PA on Conan.
You know what? I was friends with this guy. Am friends with this guy whose stepmom was the director for the first 6 years of Late Night with Conan, and then she went on to direct the Tonight Show with Jay. And she was just like grew up with them, good families with that whole crew, because there's a lot of people at Conan have been there with them for 17, 20 years.
Yep.
And so it's all family there. And so she just passed my resume along. She like saw that I wanted it and wanted to work hard and like didn't want to be a waiter or door-to-door salesman anymore. So then she passed it along. I got the gig as a production assistant. And the great thing was, is like that job was so everybody didn't act like they had seniority. Like the producers would talk to you and be friends with you, have a drink with you.
That's great.
You
know,
I could pitch a guest, even though I shouldn't. Like, I didn't know my place. Well,
who
I pitched Divine,
nice.
And I pitched Aaron Paul, too. But then, you know, they didn't listen to me on those. Adam got booked
2 years later.
I think because I think Conan's assistant's a huge fan of Workaholics, and they had just done something where it's obvious they could do interviews.
Right.
And then Aaron, I met Aaron Paul years ago through a friend. And like right when Breaking Bad started, and this was like season 3, and he hadn't done a late night show yet. And I was like, oh, you should get Aaron Paul. And they were like, well, he hasn't done anything yet. Like they couldn't see anything.
Right.
Then Conan booked him because Conan, it turns out it's Conan's favorite show. And he saw him in New York and jumped out of a car. It's like a famous story. And saw Aaron was like, I love you. Got to do my show. And Aaron's like, yeah.
Oh, my you know? God. Wow.
Can you imagine
so
that?
Cool.
Yeah. I think I don't know who else I
that's fucking
pitched.
Nuts.
I pitched you. I sent your Ferguson to them
when
I didn't work for them anymore. because I was like, this guy's good on interview.
God bless you. Look at that.
Well, look what it did
because he's done Conan now. How many times?
I never said they listen to me. They make their own choices. You know, they probably just put me right in the spam folder.
Well, I know Jeff too. Having you and Jeff Ross as a like, you know,
dope, man.
I gotta
well,
save
more
that
Jeff
poll.
Ross. He's the executive producer, and I was I got Conan's coffee. So
yeah, but
I don't have a lot of pull.
No, you do though, because you did a great job for them. You were funny, and then when you went back and did stand up on Conan and then Couch and
yeah,
crushed both, and Conan was like made a deal out of you being a PA. He loves that shit.
Yeah, he was him and JP Buck them were like, you should do that Bradley Cooper bit on the couch. Conan was like, do it on the couch because it will kill and it's good there.
If you haven't seen it, you should look it up. It's on.
That was awesome.
It's on teamcoco.com, cool. Right?
God damn it. That was great.
But meeting now with Bradley Cooper, we'll let people see the bit so they can see it and follow you on Twitter at Brent Morin.
Yeah.
And all your tour dates on BrentMorin.com.
What a day that was.
But wait, meeting Bradley Cooper?
No, not meeting Bradley.
Doing stand-up.
You know what the best day was? Well, besides that, doing Conan, that was like full circle for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you get choked up?
I did a little bit the night before because I didn't really
get nervous. Yeah,
I was a little nervous and a little bit more. It was a little bit more emotional than the sitcom or that other stuff. I mean, that was all awesome. After I did the pilot of the sitcom, I remember looking at that and being like, "Wow, I just did an NBC multi-cam sitcom. I grew up on."
We don't step back enough, by the way, from all this shit because we're so focused on
doing it.
And you want to expect a certain amount out of yourself to go, I should be here.
Yeah.
But and also you're looking forward because you're like, you do the pilot and you go, cool, man.
All right. Now
let's go to what's series. Next. Yeah. But like, dude, you got to step back.
Movie. You want so much. And you're like, oh, got to do the hour. I got to do that. So yeah, the night before I called my mom and I was
got to do the hour. That's what I said.
Like you have all these goals. And then I remember thinking, I was like, I called my mom like, yeah, I think I'm a little, I'm nervous for this thing a little bit. Once I got there, everybody there is like second family to me. So they were just a lot of like East Coast guys who bust balls and stuff. So they were all just giving me shit. Like, don't bomb Hollywood, you know, which made me comfortable.
Awesome.
Like, it was just like a great feeling. And then doing the couch, all of that was awesome.
Because you sat on that couch as stand-ins. So like that's what's bananas to me, man.
Yeah, I always said I made a joke too because a lot of the crew guys would give me shit because friends would come on and do stand-up on the show and they would know that I knew them and then they would be like, hey, why don't you hold his coat? You know, and like make me hold his shit. And I'm like, fuck you. And then I just said, mark my words, I'll be a guest on this show this year. And I remember driving home going like, shouldn't have fucking said that. That was bold. That was bold. 3 months later, I was. And I remember I was behind the curtain. I was about to come out and I said, hey, Paul, you know, I told you. And then like one of the
awesome.
Fuck you, Brent. And they open it and like kick me out. And I was just,
that is great.
But one of the best moments is I had to go to the upfronts in New York for the show and they picked the show up. That was where I got a little bit like, oh my God, they actually picked the show. That's crazy.
Explain to the non-show business people what upfronts are.
The upfronts are basically, it's like a showcase that the networks put on for advertisers. They bring like a 4-minute trailer of each show that they're picking up. And it's basically almost like a sales pitch conference. Like ours was at Radio City Music Hall, sold out. And it's like every star, J.J. Abrams and Michael J. Fox and David Schwimmer, whoever's there is there. Anybody from the show?
I was definitely there. I was definitely there. I didn't get to do stand-up, but that's because Undateable was doing stand-up first.
John Favreau. Oh, I got a funny thing for that. So the whole time we're doing it, because you got to do these red carpets, and he's like, there's a CA party and an NBC party, and they like there's all this stuff, and you got to wear a suit. And
you feel comfortable with those parties?
The Ritz. No. I feel like I got, because I could have a drink or two and people are nice. Like, and I think it's just something funny in saying something to somebody really rich, like being like, you know what you're doing wrong? You know, like having those kind of conversations.
Dude, and they
so
love
fun.
That though, man, because you're treating them like a real person.
Yeah.
And no one says that to them.
Yeah. And you could have like a lot, I'll be like, first off, you got to calm down. Okay. Because what you're doing right now is low. You got to give me better energy. And then you're just having like, I'm just having fun.
That's great, dude.
But I remember Chris was there and Chris is on his phone and he's too cool for school the whole time.
Sure.
The whole time. He had done it for Whitney like prior and he's just like that in general. It wasn't like trying to be a dick. He's just kind of like, yeah, where are we going? All right. But the funniest part was that we do the red carpet thing and we're taking photos and he's like, you're going to hate every one of these fucking pictures. Like, it's saying that to me while we're on the, like, taking the photo. And he's right. All of them, you just look bad. But we get inside. Now we're in Radio City Music Hall and they're announcing all the shows. We're the last one they announced for comedy. And they have a camera on you, but it hasn't cut to us yet, like they do at the Oscars or Golden Globes, where they're like, the guy's on the knees getting ready. Chris has been on his phone the whole time. He's kind of like, when are we done? Like, we got to eat, you know? Like doing this shit, the camera gets on our face. He calmly puts his phone in his pocket. This is where I got really fucking nervous because now you're Radio City mini drivers in front of me. Like, you
holy
know,
shit,
all these
dude.
People are going to see you on camera. They don't know who you are. And then we got to see a trailer we've never seen.
They don't know
show.
Who you are. Let me just stop real quick. That moment, by the way, because you know that you're about to be introduced to not the world yet,
yeah,
but like a lot of important people
paying your salary. Yeah.
Who all they're thinking is, who the fuck is that guy?
Yeah. Right.
So what do you do to basically prove to them, here's who I am.
I deserve to be here. Yeah.
Well, what happened was that the camera is about to come to us, and Chris calmly just goes, puts his phone into his pocket, straightens up, and then he leans over to me before they cut to us, and he goes, this is the most nervous I've ever been in my entire life. And I start laughing because everything up to that point was cool for school. And then he must have felt the same, like, sweating heart, embarrassing shit to lean up and lean into me and go, this is the most nervous I've been in my entire life. And then they cut right to us. And we got a big laugh because Chris just kept trying to cut me off. Like, we didn't know what we were going to do. We kept trying to just be like, and I was just like, we're just fucking with each other. Which was kind of what the show is anyway. Right. It's just him being like, I'm the shit.
Your chemistry.
Being like,
yeah.
Do you even hear yourself? And he's like, I only hear myself. Like, that's the whole, like, thing of the show. So that was great. But then that night, or two nights later, Conan was there for the upfronts for TBS. And his assistant calls me and says, hey, Conan wants to have drinks with you. And I was like, okay.
Nice.
And he goes, and there's a gift in my room for you. And it was a bottle of Dom Perignon from Conan. And he says, meet in the Mandarin Bar at like 6. So I go down there. It's me. It's Jeff Ross. It's a circle of everybody, like the head of William Morris, like just powerful people, friends he's had in New York, overlooking Central Park. Chris Rock walks up, says hi to Conan. Conan's like, hey, this is Brent, very funny guy. You know, things like having $20 drinks with Conan, you start getting a little buzz, and he starts saying, hey, if you ever need advice about NBC or comedy or, you know, whatever, like, you're gonna be fine. Don't worry about this. Don't worry about this. Like, you might think this.
What are some of those things? Give me one of those. You might do this, think this.
Well, he was just like, you can't be, you know, he told me a story of, like, the second year he did the upfronts, first year he was so nervous. He said, because I told, he said, how do you feel about all this? I said, oh, it's a little fast paced. You're a little, you're not used to it. You're uncomfortable. You, like, you're with Sean Hayes, you're with all these guys who've done it for years who are like legit guys.
Sure.
And he said, my second year of doing it, every actor had to come on stage back then for it. And he said, there was a group of young guys, like 20s, came up to him and were like, Mr. Brown, you have any advice? And he's like, look, you're going to be fine. Don't worry about it. Everything's going to be great. You know, making them feel okay, make them feel comfortable, call you out. You're going to have a good time. And then he says, he walks away. He's like, who the hell are those guys? That's never going to last or whatever. And that was Friends. So he says, you never know, Brent. Yeah. Like, that shit, like, and those that became like A-list movie stars. And like, he's like, so you just enjoy it. And he's just like, don't think you're like set, you know what I mean? Don't think this is it. Like, always be aware that things can go away, obviously, you know.
So be a good dude. They say anything about
It's like, and don't change who you are. Like, you're a good guy, be a good guy. Like, Conan's always been a good guy. Like, he's always just like good.
That's what you hear about him.
Yeah, he's great. And like, I know when our show has an air date and when we're about to go out that he'll do whatever he can to try to like promote it, which is cool. So
well, because he knows that be all right, friend.
No, it's just, you know, I made it all up. I'm not on a show, all right? It doesn't exist.
Oh,
you,
wow.
Just I got you all. I got the Laugh Factory. I got Marquise.
I got Marquise.
I'm still a PA.
Tom Hanks is the next me. What did you say?
Tom Hanks is fucking stupid. They're all stupid. Hollywood's dumb.
Wow, we just got Andy Kaufman.
I could be in fucking war. What does that mean?
Can you cry on cue?
Can I? Yeah.
It's amazing. What do you tap into? Or is it just...
Just me. Just everything that's going on with me. I'm not happy with who I am.
Well,
you know what I do? To be honest, as an actor, I'll tell you what I do. A little parched.
You masticate, apparently.
Yeah, here's the deal.
Kobe Bryant.
You have these moments... I'll tell you, you know what? I found the easiest thing to do. There's only two things that I tap into that could make me cry if I'm not doing something like a scene.
Yes.
There's two things that without a scene, because I realize it's easier for me to cry if I actually pretend I am that person and I'm in that moment and not think about myself. Okay. I think like if my character is dad died or whatever things I've auditioned for, where I've had to do that, or my girlfriend or something, if I just picture that it actually is my girlfriend, it makes it so much easier for me. More than me just thinking about like my dog drowning in the
Because Brent Morn wouldn't actually cry.
I'm an artist.
Yeah. My dog dying in the what?
My dog drowned in the spa. I found my dog drowned in the spa, which was terrible. So I would pull on that one. But you know what one always used to get me? This is going to be a little weird. My dad and I playing catch. That's what always that.
Just said it all, dude.
And he's still alive. But that right there, that moment we used to play every day.
That's great.
And it was just like I could tap into that one, and for some reason that gets it.
It's great.
But usually, dude, I just rely on the material. Like if you got good material,
translation writers just come up with good shit.
If you don't have good shit, then I don't know what to tell you, dude.
I don't know what to do with that. I can't spin your shit into gold.
What am I supposed to do?
Who am I? Tom Hanks?
Could you cry? Let's say you're on the phone with NBC.
Okay.
You call up and they're like, yeah, 1 second, Brent. And you're like, and they're like, hey, we wanted you to have a talk with James Cameron, who is at NBC because he's about to do a pilot / miniseries about a guy who plays catch with his dad all the time. And then and you're locked in and they're like, okay. Brent, we want you to read the scene, but we want you to improvise and we want you to make it your own.
Okay.
But there's one song that we want to have in the background while you're playing it. And it's going to assist you. It's not going to take away from the moment, but it's going to really kind of just put you into a world of what the emotion is and what you're feeling. And I don't want to tell you what the name of the song is, Brent, but it's cold and there's some wind and maybe you're outside, maybe you're inside, but and now Brent, if you want to sing your emotions, you can sing them. Just read the script. Just read the copy.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Saturday night, playing catch. Staying in because my friends aren't really there. They only like me because I care. Oh. Well, my father says, throw me the ball. Well, I did, and it was too tall for him. It went over his head.
Damn it, Brent.
This little kid Cameron grabbed it, ran away.
I got your ball, asshole.
Cameron was gay, and that has nothing to say with what I'm talking about.
I like this.
Say he did, and all I'll say is, James Cameron, please put me in this movie or miniseries called Catch. Oh, fuck.
Hi, Brent.
We're
going to need you to do that one more time. Wow. James actually just got here.
Oh, he did. Okay.
Yeah. But we've got another song for you to do.
Yeah.
Dude, that was amazing.
Brent Moore, everyone. Oh, Brent Moore. Brent, you're one of those guys that when it was announced that you got this show, comics weren't jealous. Comics weren't mad. We're like, good for Brent.
Yeah, that's how I know you're a good dude.
Yeah. Because you're out there every night. You're a good guy. Dude. Fun dude to hang out with. And you are funny shit.
You are. But you also. Yeah, but, you all,
shit,
but you've also put the work
shit,
in, man. It's like good shit happens to good people, but it also doesn't happen by chance. Like, you got to put yourself, everything, you know, what, stand up since 18?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like you put yourself in a position.
9 years or something. Yeah.
As my mom says, Puddin' Ray, she goes, you create your own good luck.
What's your mom's name?
Well, her real name is Carolyn, but her nickname is Puddin'.
Puddin' Ray?
Yeah.
Puddin' That's Ray.
Cool. Well, actually, now it's Puddin' Cox because my stepdad's last name is Cox, C-O-X. And I did this joke once on stage where I go, my stepdad's last name is Cox. My stepdad's the shit, by the way. He's the coolest guy I've ever met. My mom's real name is Carolyn Cox, but in Oklahoma, my grandpa gave her the nickname. He's Little Puddin'y. He's Little Puddin'. So all growing up, and my mom's a spunky fucking, just the coolest fucking fun, funny. I get all my shit from her. She's the best. So Puddin' makes sense of who she is. That being said, Puddin' Cox, if you didn't have her Carolyn, her work name, but Puddin' Cox. So I go on stage one night and I go, you know, I'm just glad, you know, my stepdad's name is Cox, so Puddin' Cox. I go, I guess I just should be glad that my stepdad's last name wasn't Cox in the butt. Nobody laughed.
Wait. Hey,
Cox
Adam,
in the butt.
Adam, if Bill Cosby were to do a commercial for Puddin' Cox... how would that sound?
Well, this Friday only, we've got 6 new flavors of popsicles. We've got grape, lemon lime, root beer, slushy, creamsicle, bike ride, and Puddin' Cox in the butt. Because every Friday can be fun Friday, even if you don't have legs. I'm Bill Cosby.
Bill, are you okay?
I'm Bill Cosby.
Oh, that's his send-off.
Let me send it off to Johnny real quick. Well, there's one thing you didn't say about the Johnny Depp popsicles is that they all come with a bottle of whiskey and a free DVD Blu-ray of that movie I did where I did the voice of the fucking Geico Blizzard.
What was he doing?
Rango?
Rango.
Or it could be the movie about the Geico lizard.
I knew you were searching. You were doing so well, and I felt you searching at the end of that. You're like,
no way did that.
That DVD in the movie?
Geico movie.
Dude, what if he said that? If he really said that, you know, well, that DVD of that fucking that movie with the Geico guy, that, like, what did Ringo? Johnny?
Think you made $20 million for it? Yeah, that piece of shit.
Yeah, Ringo, I would laugh. So I think he was the coolest fucking dude.
Yeah.
Dude, that would fucking... That almost makes me as happy as... I went to the Justin Bieber premiere with Chris, because Bieber's a fan of Chris.
Right.
And there's a scene in it where the guy's asking Bieber a question in an interview and goes, like, what do you do at 19 when nobody will say no to you for anything? And he tries to, like, well, I just think about my family and friends. He goes, no, no. Like, nobody will say no to you. You can do whatever you want. And during that moment, it's supposed to be a serious moment, he goes, well, I just rely on the way I was raised, da-da-da. And Chris leans over and goes, now get me a fucking dragon. It was like, and I lost it in the middle of this theater where Bieber is, and people look back, and I was like, how funny would that be if he was doing that interview and he was just like, I just look at my family, like, it's fine, now get me a fucking dragon. Like, if Justin Bieber said that in the interview with that leather outfit,
be over.
And everybody laughed, and then he just looked at you seriously, and it's like, you really just want to get him a fucking dragon? Like, what is he? If he just had the ability to be oh, fuck, man. If we were Bieber,
I know,
if we were Bieber, how fun would we be?
We would have some dragons.
We would. I'd definitely be asking for dragons.
But you know what we do have?
Uh-oh.
Oh, shit. God damn it.
What a Lisa Loeb reject song. What's that?
I was trying to play us out with this song.
Oh, yeah, you should. Yeah.
Anyway, Brent, thanks for coming on the podcast, man.
You're on Twitter. At Brent Morin.
Vine, Twitter, Instagram, all the same. Brent Morin, BRENTMORIN.
And watch the show Undateable on NBC.
NBC soon.
Doesn't have a date yet.
No.
But it will, because Brent's going to leave some voicemails in the presence of NBC's voicemail.
Take us out, Brent.
Yeah. Watch NBC. Watch NBC Undateable. You can eat it. What? Listen, Bill Cosby's a guest star. Alec Baldwin guest star. John Day Lewis. John
the
Daly.
Golfer?
Sorry, John Daly. John Daly was in an episode played by dad. Ooh, he didn't make it to the end of the taping, so it's really weird he disappears about 10 minutes into the show. But you know, we don't explain it, so that's kind of fun new shit. That's like new. Anyway, me, Rick Glassman, Ron Funches, Bianca Kay, created by Adam Stekiel, Zykiel Saki, whatever the fuck his name is. Bill Lawrence gave me a career. Thanks, Bill. I always say it like that, and he hates it. Chris D'Elia, not D'Elia. Everybody, it's D'Elia, just so you know that forever. Love your shoes, Chris. You got the best shoes in the game.
And me, Bill Cosby. I play the Puddin' Cox in the Butt Popsicle Salesman. I'm in for 2 lines, 4 episodes.
God damn it, who let Bill in here?
Bill's driving me home. Billy. Fuck yeah, man.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, Schlesinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore, because it's here, and it's funny, and I love you.